Sorry. It's the 28th of September 2019. We've just read Deuteronomy 33 and 34, and we've also just read Joshua chapter 1, the first 9 verses. And this is officially the end of the road of the Bible study that we've been doing for 4 years. And so we're at the end of the 5 books of Moses, but we're not quite done yet, because today will be the last of the sections. I think it's 158 parashot that we've had, and we're going to do a review of what we've done for 5 weeks. No, sorry, 6 weeks. The next 3 weeks, we're going to be looking at what's going on in the holidays, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. And then we're going to have 6 Bible studies, where the first one we'll look at Genesis. We'll review what we looked at over the 3 years with Genesis. Obviously, you can't put it all, so we're going to try to pick out highlights. And then we'll do that for each successive week for Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And then the last week of that, the 6th week, we will do kind of a roundtable discussion on the entire experience of what we've gained from this and what is the big picture. Obviously, some of the things, you know, we're already thinking all the connections to Jerusalem that have been very prevalent. That's kind of like a no-brainer, I think. And things like that, where we talk about what you've all gained from this. Obviously, it's only been a few of us here who've been through this physically, but I know there's a lot of people overseas that listen and have also been a part of it. So what's that called? Vicariously joining us. Virtually, but also vicariously, like, part of this whole experience. So yes, it is sad we're finishing today, but it will continue on at least for a couple months as we kind of bring closure to the whole thing. And that's kind of what today is anyways. I mean, we have Moses dying, and according to tradition, he's the one who put these 5 books together. And so we're coming to the end of what is considered the books of Moses in tradition, but this is also the end of Moses' life. So in a way, he's writing his final words, passing on his wisdom or his knowledge or what God has given to him. And so, yeah, it's kind of...
The interesting thing, though, Deuteronomy, it keeps referring to a sefer HaTorah Hazeh, like this
right.
Is the law. So it really makes it sound like Moses is right, and it's written in first person.
Sure, sure. Someone's describing Moses' death. Sure. Right. Right, but it's, I'm talking about more symbolically, that here you have the end of this book, which is what Moses is known for. What is he known for? He's known for bringing the Torah from Sinai, and this is the end of it, and it's also the end of his life. And so there's this kind of symbolic power of who he is and what he, I mean, the last verses you read there in Genesis, Deuteronomy 34, give you a summary of his ministry. The last verse 10, 10, 11, and 12. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses. Why?
Adonai knew face to face.
Right. He knew the Lord face to face. What else did Moses do? He did the signs and wonders in Egypt. That's another thing that he'll always, for time immemorial, be remembered for, of, you know, the Exodus, Passover, today the Jewish people, when they do Pesach, those plagues, the Makot, that he's remembered as bringing. Verse 12, no one has ever shown the mighty power or perform the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. So, obviously, you could argue that. You could be like, well, Elisha and Elijah and there's other people, but this is kind of like, this is the final word according to Deuteronomy. Like, you know, Moses did this and you can't touch it.
The interesting thing is, though, you said that we've got to the end. Now we've got to review and do everything. But what became very clear, even going just on, is the fact that it is not the end. It goes straight into Joshua.
Right.
And this is what you're going to do, and Joshua's going to be strong, chazak, chazak, and so on. And that, for me, is really exciting, because in the same way, it very often in Jewish tradition, it gets lost very often. We get to the end, we have Simchat Torah, we're rejoicing, and then we go straight back to the beginning and repeat the whole story again. Rather, I mean, I'm not saying that's not important, rather than saying, hey, where do we go now?
Sure.
And I like the idea of going on, let's review it, let's see, and where are we going, and what have we all got from it, and I just hope I'm here in 6 weeks' time, or whatever it is, because I think I'm not.
So who wrote that final ending?
Well, that's a whole other
Bible study
seminar. There's lots of study over the centuries about who wrote what in the Bible, and right. Sure, no, I'm sure, you know, there's some people who say it was Joshua, you know, you could come up with.
And there's other parts of the book that seem not to be Moses as well.
But we don't have a lot of time, and so I'm just going to have to pass on that, but we could talk later, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I was just looking at
yeah.
It's not Moses writing by Elizabeth.
Right, right.
Somebody else.
Well, that's the funny part is.
You described it as buried. That's kind of hard to think about Moses.
It's in Numbers, I think, where it says, and Moses was the most humble man on the face of the earth. Did Moses write that? No, okay, but I'm just saying, it. There's something there that's strange.
You read my new book on humility.
So, what... besides Moses dying and, you know, we come to this, the great end of this legacy, what did we just read here in Deuteronomy 33?
Well, for me, it was a summary, really, of each of the 12 tribes.
Yes. So, and what are they called?
I just have a feeling that one is missing, and I'm not clear if that's true.
Yes, you are. You are. It is. You're right. Which tribe is missing from the blessings?
I didn't work it out.
Here in Deuteronomy 33, which tribe is missing?
Reuben.
Nope, he's the first. Shimon, yeah.
Shimon, very good.
So, you've got these 12 blessings, but there's no Shimon, Simeon, and again, we don't really have time to go into this real quick. What do you think? Why would Simeon not appear here?
Because of his sin with Levi.
Okay.
Some are getting lumped together.
Okay, but how did Levi get... He still stayed in.
Levi is
he had Pinchas.
What?
He had Pinchas.
Pinchas redeemed his name.
He's got the Levitical connection, whereas Shimon is...
Well, historically, Shimon didn't seem to be absorbed by Yehuda. They were close to each other.
So maybe he geographically disappeared over time, absorbed.
Absorbed
into Yehuda. Uh-huh. Okay. Assimilated. You know, you could... I didn't even look... You know, you could look at some of the rabbis, like, I'm sure they've written all kinds of midrashim on why he disappeared. You know, if you go to Revelation, chapter... What is it? 7 or 8. It's talking about the tribes, the 12 tribes, and, you know, 144,000, right? The guys that are virgins and they're like these superpower guys coming out. Which tribe's missing there?
Dan.
Okay. And it's not just, you know, here. There's, you go and you read throughout the Bible all the time, there's somebody missing. Because Joseph's got his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and then sometimes Joseph's mentioned. Sometimes he's not, and it's Manasseh and Ephraim. Sometimes it's not 12 tribes. It could be 13 tribes, or it's usually maybe 12, but they'll knock some out to make it 12.
You have to kind of subtract one.
Right.
Add two.
So anyway, that's a whole other Bible study, a lot more fun to go into. I will just give you my little one thing. Which was the brother that Joseph locked up in jail whenever as a hostage till they brought back Benjamin? Simeon. So there is Simeon here. Maybe Simeon was a bad guy. Joseph didn't like him, and so I don't know. It's just, it's a funny little thing to think about. But all right, so we have these 12 blessings, and what are blessings for? What's the context?
That you might live long in the land of the Lord.
Right, but who's doing them? Who's giving the blessings? Moses. And why is Moses giving the blessings? Because he's about to die. We think back to what other story, if someone's getting ready to die, who blesses?
Jacob. It's interesting because usually a father would bless children, right?
Right.
But you don't hear anything about Moses' actual children.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
It's like you hear Moses, spiritual children, or, you know, it's like the tribal heads, right, as opposed to his personal life.
All right. So how does Deuteronomy 33 start off before we get to the blessings? What's the first five verses about?
33?
Yeah. It's describing, it's an epiphany. An epiphany is when God appears. And so it's describing the Lord, Adonai. He's this powerful entity. And what's the focus here about not just the Lord's glory, but in these five verses?
Sinai.
What?
Sinai.
Okay, Sinai. So why Sinai is so important?
So, Sinai, you think of law, the Torah, and it's mentioned, I think this is the focus of this entire, of all these contexts of the blessings. I mean, when you think of Moses, this is what you think of. You know, the New Testament, you talk about Moses, you're talking about the Torah. That's why he's brought up. Like, everybody is kind of associated with something in life. I'm an American, but like when I think of certain presidents, you think about there was something that they did, like Abraham Lincoln, the proclamation, Emancipation Proclamation. There's all these things that kind of, this defines their legacy. So my argument would be Moses' legacy is the law, is the Torah.
It's the one thing you remember about somebody. I mean, I don't know if that seems to say it's a legacy. It's a bit, you know, I'm not American, but if I think of Carter, I think of his peanuts. I mean, it's a ridiculous thing. I don't remember his anti-Semitism and all the rest of it. I think of his peanut farm or whatever. So it's what you remember of somebody. When you think of Moses, you think of Sinai, you think of the giving of the law. Or
right, throughout art history, you have him holding these two rocks,
right,
tablets. Okay, and then 33 ends with, is it five verses? I think it's, or four, yeah, I think it is five verses. Yeah.
What do you think of Eshvat?
Where are you shown?
In verse 2?
What do you call it? Hapax legomenon. It esh dat, but so they say fire law, right? But
with his right hand, he gave a fiery law.
Right. But in the you should look at the Septuagint.
Yeah, and the Septuagint has angels.
Exactly. So I think they couldn't make sense of it.
Yeah.
But I just want to end with 33 with those five verses. Again, you kind of have this conclusion of what? Chapter 33 of Deuteronomy.
Is everyone doing God?
It's the same kind of thing, right? Like the introduction. This is kind of like, this is God. Again, God's power.
Yeah, his power.
His majesty. And what's kind of cemented here and made very fundamental is his relationship with Israel. Verse 29, what's it say? Blessed
are you, O Israel, who is like you, people saved by the Lord.
There's two ways to say blessed in Hebrew. If there's more, I mean, I'm sure there's always more, but there's two basic ones. Like, just last night in Shabbat, right? Like last night, we were blessing God for the bread and the wine. Baruch atah Adonai, right? So it goes back to the creation where it says God blessed the seventh day and said it was holy. But there's another way that we translate as blessed in English. Ashrei. And Jesus uses it. Where?
In the
Beatitudes, right? The Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are...
And
it's coming from Proverbs, right?
Right.
Blessed in Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who what?
Walks
in the ways of the Lord. Right. So we're going to come to that. But look in Deuteronomy 33:29. What does it say there? Blessed is Israel. But it says Ashrecha Israel. It's that, like the Beatitudes one, the Proverbs one, the Psalm 1 one, where happy are you, or blessed are you, Israel. Why? Because you have God, basically. That's the kind of the point. And why does Israel have God? In this context, I know God chose them and...
Because they listened to his word.
Okay. So, that's going to be kind of the point, I think, this morning, is God's word. It's because God gave his word on Sinai. I mean, this is the whole argument today for religious Jewish community about why they keep Torah and all of the interpretation that is brought to it is because God gave them this and they've accepted it and they're trying to follow through with it. And this is why they're blessed, why they're happy, why they have purpose in life.
And that Bible says they have joy as well.
Right. Right. You know the whole thing everybody talks about, what's the difference between happiness and joy? And so we could think like, well, it's being blessed with something that maybe isn't necessarily, like, joy is not necessarily happiness, but it's not sadness, but it's just not, it's like a responsibility almost, joy.
Yeah, it's not the joy when a child is born and you're left with the responsibility. And it may not be so happy that it's number 15 or whatever.
Or no, just when it wakes up in the night and cries.
Right.
Were you going to say, Brian?
I was going to say, joy isn't dependent on keep receiving boxes of chocolates and bunches
right.
of flowers and a happy time on the beach.
Right.
The
chocolate
would matter.
So...
It's good. The joy is also...
Right.
Yeah. You got the word magen, I think, did you?
Yeah,
there's
magen.
And there's a heaven.
What, I was just going to bring that
point out, what's the point of, in 33, you're looking at all these blessings with these tribes. What's the point of, what is a theme that keeps repeating itself in the blessings and what you just brought up with Mohen? The blessing, let's just start off with Reuben. What's it say about Reuben?
It says, Reuben, it's pretty simple. It's nothing.
Let Reuben live and not die.
Live and not die.
Nor let his name be few.
Does that mean the people who are with him in his army, or does it mean his sons, or what does it mean?
It's.
Let's see.
It's a good question. I mean, I would. It could. It's all the same, right? Yeah. When you go to war, and if half your warriors get, you know, typhoid and they die within a month, it's sickness that killed them, not the enemy. Right. But usually, people associate it with enemies. But the typhoid can also kill your children or the people in your. So. It seems to me that a lot of these blessings have to do with, like, look at Judah. Be his help against his foes. And so you kind of have this whole thing flowing throughout about enemies, about being able to overcome your enemies, and even down to the very end of the blessings of verse 29, blessed are you, Israel, who is like you, a people saved by the Lord. He is your shield, so Magen, and helper, and your glorious sword. Your enemies will cower before you, and you will tread on their heights.
Gary, there's always two phrases, two bits. So, to one of them, Reuben, that's specific for you, may you live and not die, which is connected with his obedience to the law. And then there's a sort of a second branch to it, may the people with you be okay. And that message is repeated over again, isn't it? It's let the voice of Judah,
all these people represent their tribes, right?
So, it's a double thing. First of all, you as an individual have a responsibility, and may your tribe and your people or your children or whatever also be part of your defense, part of your life, part of your living, part of your safety. It just struck me as it was a sort of double thing every time.
Yeah.
It's kind of summarizing who is saved by the Lord. And in other words, you have favor with God. It's like all these different blessings are, no matter what your troubles are, God's going to take it all from you. You will live and not die.
What's that based on?
Keeping
his words, keeping the Torah, keeping the law. If you read this chapter, but if you go back the entire book of Deuteronomy that we just finished, Deuteronomy is all about keeping his word, keeping his commandments. So it's a double-edged sword, the sword you fight with your enemies. Because that same sword could be used against yourself. If you don't follow through with what you say you believe.
I was very struck recently reading Lois Tiverberg's book on listening to the words of Jesus. And she talks about Torah. And it gets translated so often as law. And so many Christians say, we're above beyond the law. We don't have to keep the law. But what the law really is talking about is instructions.
Yeah.
Instruction and teaching.
Yes.
How do you get into the spirit of what it is to obey the law? What is it to understand? He's giving you good ideas about how to keep the law.
Right.
And then when Yeshua comes along, all he does is sort of upgrades it and gives you slightly better ideas.
Right.
You don't commit, not to commit adultery. That's sort of a ground rule. But if you look at anybody with evil in your heart or whatever,
right,
you're also saying,
right. And I would call those ideas interpretations. Because that's the whole challenge of the Bible. Is the Bible, on one hand, was written in a certain time and place, but on the other hand, we see it as timeless. It has timeless values that stretch the entire world and stretch, you know, generations. But it takes interpretation, you know, and it's a tricky business. Danny?
Just, yeah, kind of going on what you said there, that oftentimes teaching in Western evangelical churches is said explicitly or sometimes implicitly that the entire Old Testament period, it's as if it was set up just to show that the law doesn't work and it's a failure and that you can't live by the law. And all those poor saps had to live those hundreds and thousand years just to show that it doesn't work, so that, you know, grace could come.
You're saying this is the standard Western church teaching, right?
Yeah, that they would try and be miserable, mm-hmm. and show that the law is just, you know, death giving. You know, then grace comes, and then it's life giving. But like here, it's about, like you said, like, blessed are you, Israel, Asherecha. It's life giving. It's you will be happy, you will be blessed if you come to know God through this instruction. And
also, the other problem with what you described is it makes God schizophrenic.
Yeah.
But for thousands of years, he was.
Well, it makes him
out to, like, trip people up.
Yeah, it makes him out to be this cruel thing. Like, yeah, my whole point of just that was, like, thousand years of torturing people just so that then I can bring Jesus and make it all right.
It doesn't make sense.
It's a pity it was translated as law. You know, the Torah. Mm-hmm. That it gives you the picture of the law, because, as we've said, it isn't that. Because Jesus also gave lots of laws or commands, and we're not going to be forgiven if we don't forgive. And what about that one? And
instruction. You know, she said instruction.
And said, yeah, it was it said instructions, because Jesus also gives loads of instructions, doesn't he?
He makes it harder a lot of times.
Yeah, not a lot of it.
Margaret?
Gary's already suggested that there's so much for us in our interpretation of God's word that we be careful not to lean to the right or the left. It's a very interesting thing that, you know, we as believers, we think our way is right, when we have to be worried and be humble to say maybe we've been too much to the right or the left, because that seems to be one of the admonitions at the end, that we don't go to the right or the left.
Mm.
And that's a challenge on us to interpret it right.
Totally. And so I just want to continue on here. We already read Joshua 1, the first 9 verses, and I think Joshua fits very nicely into where we're going, because what is Joshua's job? What is he, you know, Moses is known for the law. What is Joshua known for? Canaan, the land, right? Like, he's the conqueror, the whatever that stereotype, the guy with the sword. And so the whole blessing on your enemies, you know, walking on their backs and doing this and that and being strong and having your crops be prosperous and, you know, being plentiful, it's all going to be on the back of Joshua. And so just look here in Joshua 1, verse 3, I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. And this blessings, these blessings here, I think are very similar to the ones of Abraham in chapter 12, Genesis 12. Because, you know, we're talking about the river Euphrates, the Hittite country. So that's like up, way up into modern day Syria and over towards Iraq.
But you know what I think it means? It makes sense if you follow in Abraham, at least.
That swath.
If you follow the description of the land, he's talking about the north-south description of Canaan.
Right, corridor.
He's setting up the borders. You follow in the north, you follow from the edge of the water inward to the Euphrates.
Right.
The Euphrates is a river at an angle. So you don't follow it from Jerusalem all the way through Iraq. You follow it from the north because the Euphrates is a natural border in the north.
Right.
So actually, that's much more reasonable than thinking the promised land is all the way to Iraq, which is never reflected anywhere else.
Sure. Yeah. And yeah.
So it's really just a long, skinny swath down the coast.
All right.
But later in a couple of verses later in Joshua, you get the whole thing about the half tribe of Manasseh and Dan.
That's an exception.
They're to stay on the other side,
right.
But they're to be armed to come in and support their brethren as they go.
And notice they're to come into the land, right? So Manasseh's land is considered outside the land. It's given to them as an exception.
And where is it?
What do you mean, where he died?
Where is Manasseh, the half tribe of Manasseh?
On the other side of the Jordan.
It's in Gilad. It's in Jordan today.
It's in Jordan today.
Right. It's like a finger that goes up from the south side of Canaan
right.
to the east.
So I want to focus on those last three verses of that we read, Joshua 1, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So that's four verses. Joshua 1, verse 6, be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Verse 7, be strong and very courageous. So it's a double time. Rak chazak ve'emat. Me'od. And it says... Lishmor la'asot. The translation I have here is carefully obey all the law. So it's this imperative. So here's one idea I have, one theory. You know, we always think about Joshua, be strong and courageous, and we think about him as a warrior. Like, he's going to fight his enemies, so he's got to be strong and courageous. He's got to get pumped up. But I think that in the Bible, this phrase, be strong and courageous, is actually related to how you follow God's law. That it takes courage to follow God's law. There's times where you don't know exactly how to interpret it or how to do it. And...
times when you don't want to do it, really.
That too. That's
humility, right?
Right.
Humility, like you don't always
want
it.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a Jewish phrase when people are talking about some tradition they have to keep or whatever, and you say, hey, they're always, the response always is, it's hard to be a Jew. Mm-hmm. And really sometimes to do whatever it is, but it's hard to be a Jew, and I think you can apply it just as well to any of us.
Yeah.
It's really quite tough to stick at what the Lord is telling you to do or not to do or whatever.
Well, an interesting point on this is we're talking about Joshua. A lot of people give Joshua a bad rap because, you know, there's so much destruction and, you know, wiping out this city or that. But this principle, every time he comes up to a city, it's never... one blanket commandment that he just acts the same way to everything no matter what. He actually prays and he says, what should we do in the case of this city? Every time he's not sure. He doesn't just say, hey, we're coming in to conquer everybody and we're going to attack. It's like, no. He's praying like, should we
do this? Or that? Yeah.
And then based on what he hears, he does. Like Jericho, okay, walk around the walls. That's weird, but okay, that's what we're supposed to do. I, different thing, you know, each thing actually has, he doesn't just operate on his own. He's got to be careful and wait.
And what, back in Deuteronomy 34, when, you know, Moses is dying, and, or he does die, if you go to verse 9, Deuteronomy 34, 9, it says, now Joshua, son of Nun, was full of what? Spirit of wisdom. So this kind of goes along with what you're saying, Sharon. You know, wisdom, because, you know, when Solomon also becomes like the new Joshua, if David was Moses, like we talked about 2 weeks ago, you know, what does Solomon ask for?
Wisdom.
He asks for wisdom. And so, in effect, Joshua is also, the wisdom is the key. It's that first characteristic to be any good leader. The rest of things might come later, but if you don't have that wisdom, that discernment to make good choices, it's going to be difficult. So here he is. He's full of the spirit of wisdom, and going back into Joshua 1, verse 7, God saying, you know, keep guard to do my instruction. And he says, don't turn to the right or the left, as we brought up here a couple times this morning. And then what will happen if you stay straight?
You'll be successful.
Yeah.
Wherever you go.
It's like you're going to get more wisdom.
Taskil, yeah. That word, it's interesting. It has prosperous here, but it's kind of the root of it is also wisdom. Because it's often in Proverbs and wisdom literature.
In Proverbs, wisdom is personified as a person. And I guess I've always understood it to be part of who Yeshua is, part of the nature of God. And it ties up with the spiritual wisdom that you gave us just now for Joshua in Deuteronomy. That you don't have wisdom in the flesh. You don't have wisdom thinking your own way. You have to have the Spirit of the Lord to know what is wisdom. And it's true for leaders, but it's true for every one of us too.
Yeah, and for me, we always talk about wisdom like, you know, the old person's got wisdom, or the, it's like life experience. And it is. And I do think older people have more wisdom than like me or my kids, because they haven't lived long enough and they haven't seen things. And, you know, what really bugs me is like when you get that little punk kid who's like, yeah, I know. And they don't know anything, but, you know, they just think they've got it all going on. That wisdom is that it's interpretation. Like, wisdom is how you decide to enact either punishment or reward or how you live your life. Like, you have to interpret the events around you. Like, if a storm comes and, like, wipes out your entire city, you know, you could be like, oh, well, that city's cursed. You could interpret it that way. Or you could be like, okay, this is a challenge that we've got to overcome. And so wisdom is very much interpretation of how are you going to approach things that happen, especially bad things in your life. How are you going to see them through God's eyes, you know, in a big, long view?
You think there's a connection also with, I think it's the last verse of Hebrews 5, where it says, milk is for the infant, but meat is for the mature who have learned by practice to discern good from evil. It's almost like God gives us a chance to practice learning what really is a better way. So young Christians, for example, they get away with God gives them a way to do many things that later he'll start to stop them. You know, new believers, they can do anything.
Give us that verse again.
Hebrews, I think it's chapter 5, verse 14, the end verse where it says, now, milk is for the infant, meat is for those who are mature, who have learned by practice to discern good from evil.
So, just because our time is running out, I just want to press on here. Verse 8, Joshua 1:8. Don't let this scroll of the Torah, depart from your mouth. Other translations here? Okay, lips, but it is mouth. I just want to point out that this word here for departing is not a very common word, and it appears if you go to Jeremiah 17 verse 8, that famous verse. Jeremiah 17:8. They will be like a tree planted near a stream, whose roots spread out toward the water. It has nothing to fear when the heat comes, Its leaves are always green. It has no need to be concerned in a year of drought. It does not stop bearing fruit.
And it always has joy.
Where you have joy?
No, I was just going to say, you could turn that. It's well, joy. Huh? It's always got joy. Well,
sure. Yeah, Jeremiah 17:8.
Sorry.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The tree does not fear when he comes.
It does not stop bearing fruit. The word there for bearing fruit, it's saying that the fruit does not depart. It does not cease from bearing fruit. But it's that same word in the Hebrew. And what are we talking about here in Jeremiah 17? Who are the ones planted like a tree by a stream of water?
The ones who trust in
the Lord. And where else do we have this same illusion of a tree planted by the water?
Psalm 1.
Okay, go to Psalm 1. Just to remind ourselves here. Blessed is the man.
Ashrei.
Yeah, the one we just had. Ashrei Ha'ish. Blessed is the man that does not walk in the way of the wicked, stand in the pathway with sinners, sit in the assembly of scoffers.
But his delight is in the Lord, and the Lord, and in his law will he meditate day and night. He will be like his
a tree.
A tree planted by streams of water, whose yields its fruit in season, whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers.
Yes.
And it ties up wonderfully with it. As out of divine, we will go out with joy, and the trees of the field will gather.
Joshua 1, verse 8. Read it.
And Joshua's supposed to be repeating it day and night.
Mm-hmm. Okay, boy, you're right. But what else does it say there about the law?
You will succeed in everything he does.
Right.
The interesting thing is, today is the day of parashah in Deuteronomy 30. 14, the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may do it. It's not a great problem. You haven't got to go running around beating yourself up.
Obedience again.
Yeah, it's very near you. It's in your mouth, it's in your heart. But what you read just now was about it being departing from your mouth.
Right.
And here we've got Moses saying, a couple of chapters back, that it's very near, it's in your mouth.
Joshua has a combination of Jeremiah and Psalms.
Yeah. And so what I'm trying to bring home here in Joshua 1, verse 8, just read it, we'll read it again. This law must not leave your lips or depart from your mouth. You must memorize it or what? Meditate. Do you have that meditate?
Yeah, on it day and night.
On it day and night. What does Psalm 1 say? In Psalm 1, verse 2, it says, he obeys the Lord's commands and he meditates on it day and night. Same thing. Same words, same idea. It's the same. He's like a tree planted by the water. Okay, we come back to Joshua 1:8, and he says that if you do all this stuff, then tatzliach, your way. Your way will be successful. It will prosper. And so, same thing as Sharon mentioned in Psalm 1, verse 3, he's like a tree planted by the waters, it yields its fruit at the right time, its leaves never fall off, and he succeeds, same thing as Joshua 1, he succeeds in everything that he does. And let me just finish up here with this, Joshua 1:9. Again he says, I command you, be strong and courageous. So this is the third time in those three or four verses, be strong and courageous. And it's all in that context of God's word. That's what I want to bring home this morning. Don't be afraid and don't panic. So, for I, the Lord your God, am with you in all that you do. And so, that's, I think, as we finish up this whole collection here, these first five books of Moses, we're ending with his death, but it's, as Jim has pointed out, we're going into Joshua. This is the next chapter.
how do we walk out God's ways with his word? How do we obey his word? And it's interesting how Joshua 1 has this direct tie in to Psalm 1. And you talk about the Tanakh. What does Tanakh stand for? Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim. Right? So you got the law, the prophets, and the writings. What's the first book of the Torah? Genesis. What's the first book of the Nevi'im, the prophets? Joshua. And what's the first book of the Ketuvim? Psalms. So Joshua is the very first book of the second part of the Jewish scriptures. And Psalm is the very first book of the third part of the scriptures.
Oh, right. That's good.
And so you see this kind of, you want to call it a scarlet thread, but that God's word, and it runs all the way over from this first section.
And actually, if you want, you can talk about Genesis in the garden, because you have knowledge of good and evil, you have the haskim, to be wise. There's some artistic plays with that as well.
Yes.
Then you have the first book of the Torah.
So when, like, the summary would be like the whole point of this whole practice. You know, people will be like, you know, what is this Bible study? Why are you reading, you know, why doesn't somebody just tell you what the Bible says? And like, why are we kind of talking about it and looking at it? And the whole point is we're supposed to do this. This is, you know, to meditate it on a day and night is not a sermon. Anybody can give a sermon and tell you what they think, right? That's what politicians do. But if you're actually processing and meditating on God's word constantly, it's going to change your character throughout the day at the most weird times when you least expect it, because it's in your heart. Like Psalm 119 says, your word I've hidden in my heart, that I might not sin against you. And so that's kind of the whole thing. How do we know if we're sinning today? How do we know if we're going off a little to the right or a little to the left? How do we stay on the straight and narrow? And it's because we are taking God's word seriously, we're wrestling with it, and we're applying it humbly. That's another key, I think, too, is, you know, the humble. That's where the heart of Jesus, that's where God's heart is. Isaiah 57, I am with the humble, God says. I'm with the brokenhearted. And so I think most people are brokenhearted because they realize they're sinners.
And there's also a concept you have to learn to interpret. We're constantly learning.
Exactly.
Because if we weren't, then at a certain point you would need to meditate.
You never arrive.
Yeah,
this
had all the answers and was so perfect.
You wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
It's what Sharon was talking about, Joshua. You know, when he's going to battle, he knows the law, but yet he's still meditating on God's ways,
how to apply it to the situation. Yeah.
You know, so it's a relational thing.
Exactly, it's a relationship. Yes.
I think the law of Moses, which he commanded the people, is to protect them. Because the law is the sword and the law is the shield. So when they dwell in the word, they become the shield, they become the sword. So these commandments were given by Moses to precede the battle. So they are going to battle with Joshua. So Joshua has to know the law to become a shield, to become a sword, so that he can be successful. And he is the only one who is given the spirit of wisdom. So the spirit of wisdom is given to him to use the law and to use the word to win the battles and to be successful. And three times he said, be strong and very courageous. Because Moses is like a father to him. He is dead. So Joshua is heartbroken. He is now confused. Even though he has the spirit of wisdom, the law, he is very confused and he is heartbroken. He doesn't know what way to go without Moses. So God is strengthening him, saying that, be strong and courageous, because I am with you, and the law is there, and you can use the spirit of wisdom to use the law to make the people come into the land.
Yeah. All right. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, guys. Be strong and courageous.